Insurance professionals work hard every day to keep people safe. But as technology transforms the industry, how can insurers protect not only their clients, but also shield themselves from ever-changing cyber risks? My name's Elizabeth Blossfield, and I'm the host of the Insuring Cyber Podcast, a bi-monthly look into how the world of cyber and the business of insurance are connected. Hello, and welcome to the Insuring Cyber Podcast. It's almost the end of October, if you can believe it, which means National Cybersecurity Awareness Month is also coming to an end. So we have a great episode planned to close out this month. National Cybersecurity Awareness Month is not only good for raising awareness about the importance of cybersecurity, but also about issues within the cybersecurity industry itself. In the last episode of this podcast, we heard from two guests about how the Biden administration is increasingly treating growing ransomware concerns as a risk management problem and ways the public sector can partner with insurers to find a solution. If you missed it, you can check out that episode on insurancejournal.tv. On this episode, we're talking with two more guests about another issue affecting the cybersecurity workforce, the gender gap. Washington, D.C.-based think tank New America reported that although the number of women in the cybersecurity field is increasing, it's still an overwhelmingly male-dominated industry. A recent ISC cybersecurity workforce report found that according to survey results, women currently account for about one quarter of the overall cybersecurity workforce. The New America report cited a 2017 Global Information Security Workforce Study on Women in Cybersecurity from the Center for Cyber Safety and Education, ISC, Alta Associates, and Frost & Sullivan, which found that women at nearly every level of cybersecurity are paid less than their male counterparts, and more than half of women in cybersecurity report that they've experienced discrimination, compared with only 15% of men. With this in mind, I spoke first with Dr. Magda Shelley, a cybersecurity professional, former chief information security officer, public speaker, and entrepreneur. She describes herself on Twitter as a cyber feminist and also founded Women on Cyber Singapore, an organization that offers training, mentorships, events, and scholarships in cybersecurity, as well as career advancement for female professionals aiming to start or continue a cybersecurity career. She spoke with me about discrimination women face in the field, women she's looked up to throughout her career, and offered her advice for cybersecurity professionals at any point in their careers, as well as businesses looking to improve their own cybersecurity efforts. Check out our conversation. Hi, Magda. It's great to be speaking with you today. How are you doing?
Hello, Elizabeth. I'm very good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Yeah, thanks for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate it.
You're most welcome. It's all my pleasure.
Great. Well, I was curious if you could start off just kind of talking a little bit about your background and what originally led you to pursue a career in cybersecurity.
Elizabeth, I think this is actually really an interesting story because I started as a telecommunication engineer. I have been encouraged by my father actually to pursue engineering studies, and that's what I did. Now, when I started my studies, I realized that I could become an engineer and then continue with some research in the topic of localization or positioning. So basically finding an alternative solution to the GPS system at that time, many years ago, there was no way into finding or locating humans inside buildings or whenever you were talking or walking in an environment where there was a lot of very high buildings. Anyway, a practically technical topic. So I decided that why not continue in the research in that field and finalize with a PhD. So when I was starting my PhD at the beginning, I was super excited about this research and the potential of what that can bring. And the more I started researching about the technology, the more I have discovered the aspect and or domain and areas of cybersecurity that relates to those technologies. And on the other side, which is slightly more funnier, when I have done or started the research, I needed to spend a lot of time basically in a lab searching by myself those topics on a laptop. After a while, I got a little bit bored and I was looking at what could be more exciting or a domain or a topic that I could be interested in. And that's how I started looking at cybersecurity. So that was many, many years ago.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, thank you for sharing that backstory with us. And I know that in your Twitter profile, you describe yourself as a cyber feminist. Can you talk about what that term means to you and some of the work that you've done to advocate for more women in this field?
Thank you for bringing up this question. It is a very important topic for me. And I do believe that whatever we have done until today to encourage more women into the cybersecurity field, it is still not enough. So the term cyber feminist is actually a combination of course, cyber and feminism. However, the main objective and goal of that movement, which is cyber feminism, is to encourage egalitarian opportunities for both genders and ensure that if a woman wants to pursue a cybersecurity career, that she will have the same opportunities, the same possibilities than, for example, her colleague or her counterparty, male friend, for example. Now, whenever we're talking about this topic, there is certainly a very big difference between various regions, various countries as well. So it is important to understand that the efforts need to be continuing across those different regions, and not because, for example, in Europe, we have seen in North Europe, the countries reached a very good position where, for example, in Poland or in Finland, we see women in leadership positions in various technical fields or male-dominated fields. That is not the case in other countries. We can talk about, for example, Africa in general. We can talk eventually in regions that are within, you know, that south hemisphere of the world. So it is a topic that is, for me, very important. And now, of course, it means giving the opportunities. Now, I repeat that because sometimes there is a misunderstanding or misconception of the cyber feminist movement and what it actually tries to achieve. Now, again, from my perspective, and what I fight for is to ensure that if, for example, a young girl wants to continue her studies in a technical field like cybersecurity, that she's given all the right means, that she is empowered, that she is able to look at the right role models, and she sees success in that particular field.
Yeah, that's a really important point that you raise about sort of making sure that this effort reaches geographically across the board. And I know that you're based in Singapore and you founded Women on Cyber Singapore. So can you talk about the work that group does and how you got involved?
Absolutely. So Women on Cyber is a group that I founded in 2016 when I came to Singapore. And now the whole objective is to pursue and push the whole values that I just discussed in the previous question. Now, I'm a strong believer that talking about things will not achieve results. It's all about actions. And therefore, Women on Cyber is actually doing so by driving events and driving really scholarships for women in cyber, for girls who want to pursue the cybersecurity career. And as an example, I can mention the third edition of our Capture the Flag for Girls competition in Singapore as part of the SG Cyber Women series. And we are organizing an award ceremony very soon. And that will ensure that not only the winners of the competition get a scholarship with basically offensive security study materials, but as well that we are able to launch a different scholarship allowing other women or girls who are willing to apply to get 5 additional opportunities to learn on how to hack. And again, this is the whole objective and the whole vision of our Women on Cyber Singapore group. We do not only talk about making diversity, we are actually taking real proper actions and we're making sure that we encourage and empower those women to achieve those.
Yeah, that's great. It sounds like that group is doing a lot of great work. And you've obviously done a lot of advocacy for encouraging more women to pursue careers in cybersecurity. So there's no doubt women in the field look up to you. But I was curious, are there women in cyber or tech that you've looked up to or have inspired you throughout your career?
I think this question is actually really nice, because obviously when you are very often, you know, talking about cybersecurity to other female professionals, you're trying to encourage, you're trying to motivate them, you sometimes forget about yourself, and that is the reality. So I like this question, that what are or who are the women who I look up to? And I definitely have a few role models, but I would say most of my role models are very strong women CEOs of international Fortune 500 companies. So I like to look at it from the perspective of a woman who had achieved certain career opportunities, who had managed to really go through that male-dominated environment and make sure that she succeeded. And those are some of the examples. Now, when we talk about those kind of strong women, we can talk about, for example, again, the actually CEOs of big Fortune 500 females are not a lot. So most of them, I'm a very big fan of them, and I look up to them. So again, it's not only cybersecurity, but mostly women who have actually been able to achieve and make a difference, like Mary Barra from General Motors. And this is someone who I really look up to.
Right. Yeah, that's great. And you mentioned this gender gap that still sort of exists within cybersecurity. I read a recent interview where you were talking about some of the barriers to entry for women in tech and cybersecurity. And one of them that you mentioned was negative comments or remarks that women in the field sometimes receive. So can you talk about this and some of the challenges that women face building careers in cybersecurity?
Thank you, Elizabeth, for mentioning this question in particular. It is a very important topic. I have exchanged with the members of Women on Cyber on several opportunities or occasions. And one topic that comes up very often is that whenever women post, for example, online a research or a talk or any other contribution, they face very often much harder criticism than the counterparties, for example, a male colleague. And this is the reality. If we look in general on cyberbullying online, we also realize that women are a much more frequent target than men. Now, of course, when it comes to cybersecurity, that means that speaking up, writing about your achievements, writing about your research might not be such an easy task or an easy ambition or project for certain, especially younger women in the field. Imagine you are a young woman in cybersecurity, you decide to start and write your first article about the topic, and then you face 10 criticism with one, for example, saying that you lack the experience to write about the topic. That might be extremely devastating and will lead to the fact that that particular young lady will not want to write or share her knowledge further. A very interesting feedback from one of my colleagues, a male cybersecurity professional, who told me and shared with me that when he was at a very young stage of his career, he has done a few public talks where he actually made mistakes, literally technical mistakes. And he said his own words that he did not receive any negative comments. However, he sees that if that was the case for a woman, the woman would receive immediately negative comments and feedback saying that she is not up to the level required by that particular, for example, conference, or that she should not share publicly her knowledge. Now, let's make it very clear. No matter how much experience we have, independently of which kind of field, we all have something to learn. And we all need to ensure that the younger generations, people starting, are able as well to share their perspective and their knowledge. And if they made a mistake, we need to ensure that we actually help them in a constructive way to learn, and rather than negatively comment or try to push that person down. It's not the right way to, again, share knowledge, to build a community with the right values.
Right. And you mentioned we all have something to learn. And I love that. That's so true. So what advice do you have for women, especially young women who are planning to pursue careers in cybersecurity or who may be just starting off in their careers?
I think, Elizabeth, one very important advice is do not assume that a career looks in a certain way, that your job will look in a certain way, and that you need to do things in a certain way. So those are all preconceptions. Those are all our ideas of, for example, how it should be or how it will be, what we have seen in the movies or in the documentaries. But everyone has his own or her own journey. So depending on your life experience, depending on what you want, you will be able to build your career and your life as you wish. And now this leads me to another part that is extremely important when it comes to women in cybersecurity or women in general, professionals who are aiming into achieving more and reaching a certain level in, for example, compensation. Ask for it. If you know that you deserve it, if you know your worth, you need to ask, for example, for a promotion. You need to ask for a raise. No one is going to give it to you just because you have worked hard if you don't ask for it. And this is the second advice that I'm giving to the young ladies. It is really important to be sure that you understand what you want to achieve, what are your goals that you are looking towards, and that you're able to judge yourself in a very objective way. Do you actually deserve now? Are you ready for that promotion or for that raise? Now, this brings me to the last point, which is the third point. This does not mean that, for example, a female professional needs to achieve perfection. Perfection does not exist. So what you need to achieve is basically the right amount of work that brings result. And that means that if you are looking at a new role or a new job and you feel that, oh, you are just fulfilling 60% of it, go for it anyway. If you are today already able to provide 100% of your new role that you're aiming for, what you're going to learn in the new role? And this is the last point that I want to make for all the women in cybersecurity, independently of their step or path or, you know, level in terms of career. It is really important to always learn as yourself and always try to evolve and not putting barriers or obstacles to your own career by yourself.
Yeah, that's great advice for women really at any stage of their career. And October is National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. So I was curious, based on your experience in this field, what are the most important things that others should know or something that you wish there was more awareness of when it comes to cybersecurity?
Elizabeth, I think there is a lot of, you know, media and a lot of articles about cybersecurity and how important it is and the fact that companies need to be very careful about their cybersecurity strategy. However, every time when, or most of the times when you look at successful cyber attacks, we realize that they are due to very basics or controls that are fundamental controls when it comes to cybersecurity. Now, I'm a strong believer that it is due to the fact that there is still a lot of misunderstanding of what does cybersecurity, what is cybersecurity in itself, what does it mean for individuals, what does it mean for companies. We're talking about technical terms, we're talking about ransomware, we're talking about new technologies, but have we actually asked ourselves or asked the people working with us, do they understand those terms? Do they know what the terms mean? And very often we find out that they don't. For example, if we ask our colleagues that are not in cybersecurity or not in tech, what does cloud mean? We'll be surprised that they might not know exactly what cloud means. Again, not everyone is in cybersecurity, not everyone is tech savvy. And we need to find that balance and ensure that we are able to communicate about cybersecurity and cyber awareness in a language that is understood from the general public and everyone, not only from people in the industry. This brings me to another topic. There is various cybersecurity professionals and in general, even news and medias using terms that relate to cybersecurity that are pretty confusing. And whenever we're talking about cyber awareness or the cyber risks for the businesses, those are concepts that need to be explained in a very transparent and very simplistic way. And I will go further in the practical example. We have been seeing a very big increase in a cyber threat called ransomware. Ransomware is a malicious software that comes from the word ransom and malware. Now, this threat is not specifically or does not represent a risk to the business. It is a cyber threat. The risk for the business is whenever there is an opportunity or possibility that that particular cyber threat will affect the business, leading, for example, with a business interruption or the business unable to continue its activities as usual. And we are talking about disruption. And this is specifically a cyber risk. So now, again, if I take a step back, if we talk about cybersecurity awareness of, or if we would like to bring a further understanding about what is important to do in order to protect ourselves online and protect our loved ones, we need first to understand the right concept and use them accordingly without assuming that others will understand what those concepts mean. Now, of course, one of the main aspects is to ensure that Cyber Awareness Month brings some good tips and practical advices. First of all, I would say that before going into some practical advices is that there's no 100% security. No matter what every company will do, no matter what an individual will be able to do around their own cybersecurity, there is always a residual risk. And therefore, there's always a possibility that someone somewhere will be hacked. Now, this brings me to the point that it's as well about monitoring. So whenever we are talking about cybersecurity, it's not assuming that we'll be able to protect anything 100%, but that we will do our best to reduce the impact of that particular cyber attack while we are able to detect if there is anything suspicious that is happening. Now, as much as I would like to say that this is easy to implement, it's not. And definitely if we're talking about someone or users who are just listening to us, they will tell how this is possible. How am I going to do that across all my emails, or how do I protect myself online? There are several simple steps, like, for example, receiving alerts if someone is trying to access your email online. This is already a very good way of ensuring that you have visibility. Someone in another country is trying to log into your email account, that triggers an alert, and you're able to actually react and go to your email and stop that attack from happening, or change your password. Now, again, if we're talking about cyber awareness as well, I would like to bring this perhaps analogy. We're talking about health, our health, and especially nowadays is a very important topic. So every one of us is trying to do the best that they can to protect themselves from being sick. They will try to eat healthy. They will try to take eventually some vitamins. But if there is a very strong virus, you might as well become sick. And when you become sick, what you do, you go to visit a doctor, or you try to, you know, rest to recover. In any case, you are actually eventually becoming sick because of that particular virus. Cyber is no different, aside that you as an individual or the business will not become sick, but they will become a victim of a cyber attack. And you need to react. And the reaction is not going to a doctor, but eventually recover your system, recover the access to your email or online accounts as soon as possible to reduce the impact. So again, the whole objective of the Cybersecurity Awareness Month is to raise that awareness, to ensure that we are able to understand what are the threats that we might be exposed as individuals and as companies. And that means that we need to understand those concepts. And we need to understand how to manage not only protection, but as well detection and recovery. And I would like to bring a last point here. I think the health aspect or example might be interesting as well to make an analogy with insurance. Whenever we are talking about health, we very often talk about health insurance as well. So I will bring the same example when it comes to cybersecurity. Whenever we are actually exposed to a cyber attack that is successful, we might actually have or incur really big financial losses. And therefore, those financial losses might actually have negative impact on our business, on our cash flow. What can help is a cyber insurance. So I think, you know, I try to bring different perspectives in this particular last question, but I do think that there are fundamentals that need still to be applied before going into much more advanced and complicated discussions about cybersecurity.
Yeah, those are all great points. And that final analogy about health is really important and especially relevant for the times that we're living in today with ransomware and the pandemic. So this has been a great conversation. And thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
You're most welcome, Elizabeth. Again, it's all my pleasure.
To continue this conversation about gender disparity within the cybersecurity workforce, I spoke next with Teresa Payton. Teresa made history as the first female to serve as White House Chief Information Officer, overseeing IT operations for George W. Bush and his administration from 2006 to 2008. She's currently the CEO and Chief Advisor for cybersecurity consulting firm Fortalice Solutions and an author. Her most recent book, Manipulated, Inside the Cyber War to Hijack Elections and Distort the Truth, released in 2020. She also previously starred in the former CBS TV series Hunted, a reality show in which teams competed to stay off-grid and disappear in today's digital world. She spoke with me about what she's learned throughout her career, changes she believes need to happen in order to achieve more equality within the cybersecurity workforce, and how she believes the industry has a branding problem when aiming to attract new talent. Here's what she had to say. Hi, Teresa. It's great to be speaking with you today. How are you doing?
Oh, doing great. I hope you're doing well.
I am. Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
You bet. I've been looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, so have I. I think it's going to be a really great conversation. And I was wondering if you could just start off sort of talking about your background and what led you to pursue a career in cybersecurity and some of the work that you do at Fortalice.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I mean, for starters, it's interesting because, you know, I always say I really got my start with, I went to Quantico High School, which is a Department of Defense school. It's on the Quantico Marine Corps base. And what's interesting is they made it mandatory to take a computer programming course. And I'm so glad they did because that started my lifelong love for all things technology in doing that. And that sort of set me on a little bit of a different path than maybe I would have taken had I not had that course. You know, the other thing I would say is because my family's comprised of a long line of US military and law enforcement professionals, it seems like in the family, it's like the family business to protect and defend other people. And, you know, I worked really hard in high school to get good grades and focus on academic scholarships to fund college. So I got the opportunity to take computers in college as well. And interestingly enough, that we weren't calling it cybercrime back then, and the internet was still fairly in its infancy. We were using it at University of Virginia, where I got my graduate degree. But really in the workplace, it wasn't considered sort of the norm to be on the internet during the workday. And I really started off sort of on the consumerization of technology. So working on sort of emerging platforms at that time, machine learning, big data analytics, expert systems, artificial intelligence, and working on these cutting edge platforms kind of put me on the cutting edge of fraud and what we now refer to as cybercrime. And, you know, it sort of flipped a switch for me around how do I make elegant technology that our banking customers want to use while at the same time keeping the transaction safe, the privacy of the customers and the bank safe. And so that really kind of got me thinking a little differently about, you know, how to develop technology. And then I got the incredible opportunity after 16 years in banking, I got this great opportunity to work as the first female chief information officer for the White House under President George W. Bush. And that's actually what helped me make the decision to dedicate the rest of my career towards fighting cybercrime. Because once I got there and read into different special programs and realizing the amorphous threats that were being targeted at White House staff, at the White House, at undisclosed locations, international trips, you name it, I just thought, there's a different way to look at cybersecurity, and it's not just slapping on strong passwords. It's really designing for the human who's using the technology versus making the human conform how they do their work to the technology to be secure. So that's just a little quick down sort of like a little history lane there on how I got to be doing what I'm doing with cybersecurity.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. You know, I got into business journalism because I had to take a financial journalism course in college. So I love that story that, you know, you had to take a computers course in college and then it led to this very extensive career in cybersecurity. And you mentioned your time as the first female to serve as White House Chief Information Officer under President George W. Bush and his administration. And as you said, this was during a time when it seems like cyber threats were just kind of starting to ramp up and transform into what would eventually become the attacks that we're seeing today, which are much wider scale. So can you talk about some of the work that you did during that time and how you've seen cyber threats sort of evolve since then?
Sure. Well, you know, one thing I try to remind people is, the first iPhone from Apple came out in the year 2007, and you know how much things have changed, because it's really not just a high-powered computer in your pocket or your pocketbook. It's really more than that. It's an engagement platform. It's a reminder. It's an alarm clock. It's how do I drive someplace? It's your portable Garmin, so to speak, and so the technology transformation efforts that we did at the White House were really to modernize the internet infrastructure, but also the transparency. So there's a part of White House mission and operations which must be private and confidential and has to be secured. But then there's a part of the work that truly is the people's business. And so that outreach back to the United States citizens, as well as to citizens across the globe, and moving from what up until that time period had been, you know, not a very interactive mode. It was sort of like, here's our stuff on whitehouse.gov, and really considering how to do outreach that wasn't just emails and whitehouse.gov and leveraging social media platforms and sort of testing the waters around that and then making sure the infrastructure was safe and secure and resilient and reliable. And so it was just a really fascinating time to be a part of all of that and to be driving that technology strategy and security strategy. So for example, when I got there in 2006, although there is the national security watch floor, and that's been there for a long time, and they had a security operations center that was 24/7. The White House proper, the actual operations of the White House, did not have a security operations center for all of the technology. And so, you know, that was kind of one of the first things that we needed to build out for the White House, for the whoever would be the next administration to follow the Bush administration, because I came in the second half of the second term. So it was an incredible time to be a part of the White House and thinking through all those modernization efforts and putting those plans into design and into place. Some of the other things that aren't super apparent to most people is that when you're there for the second half of the second term or the second half of the first term, depending on how many terms a president serves, there's something called transition. And besides just the transition of international policy and different, there's 13 components that make up the executive office of the president, you know, sort of the different initiatives in each of the components, there's the data transfer that has to happen. And so presidential records have to be archived a certain way, and federal records have to be archived a certain way. And while the new president is being sworn in and the other president is departing, you have to actually remove that administration's data. And you know, it's almost like everybody expects you to flip a switch, and you have to remove all of that data and hand it over to the federal records management, and presidential records go to the National Archives because they have to do their work to preserve the records for generations to come. And so while the new president's being sworn in, furiously behind the scenes, the technology team has to have a playbook in place to be able to remove the data, get it ready for National Archives, and then everybody expects to go to work on the new administration right after the swearing in. So you have to be ready for new people showing up and provisioning the technology. It was so funny because when I first got on board, and I wasn't even there a couple of weeks, and I got a phone call that said the National Archives wants to meet with you. And I said, great, what are we talking about? And they said, presidential transition. I'm like, that's 2.5 years from now. And they said, yeah, it's time to start planning. So I think, you know, just again, one of those things where there's some things that make sense when you talk about it, but from the outside looking in, it's just not super obvious.
Right, right. And a position like that sounds like obviously enormous responsibility on its own, but did you feel any extra responsibility being the first female in that position, hoping you would sort of pave the way for more women in the field and be an example for them in their careers?
You know, at the time, it was interesting because as I was walking around my first day and getting introduced to the team, it was really interesting because I kept having different people once in a while say, I'm paraphrasing, but something to the effect of, oh, you're not what I expected. And so after probably 3 to 5 people saying that to me, I remember meeting Sue, and Sue's fairly tall and very high energy, really smart lady. And she said, oh, you're not what I expected. And she's kind of pumping my hand in a very high energy, friendly handshake. And I said, were you expecting somebody taller? Because I'm quite petite. And she said, yes. And I said, maybe broader shoulders. And she said, yes. And I said, were you expecting a male? And she goes, yes. Oh my gosh. And we both had a laugh. And I said, well, everybody's in for a real treat here. And so at the time, I just was focused on getting the job done and really focused on not so much that I was the first female, but really focused on the president had a motto, which was, we must leave things better than we found it. And so my focus was on, okay, we've got 2.5 years left here. What still needs to be done to be ready for whoever is the next president and make sure that they've got the tools and the platforms and the things that they need to be successful. And so I really was focused on that. And it wasn't until after I left the administration and I reflected back that I thought, wow, the president's commitment overall to diversity and inclusion gave me an incredible opportunity to serve. And it gave me an opportunity to make sure that I had diversity and inclusion within my team and that I, you know, show people a path to be in technology, to be in cybersecurity. And so I look back and reflect and I think, how fortunate was I that the president was so committed to diversity and inclusion and that I had that incredible opportunity to continue to pay it forward.
Yeah, that's great. And you mentioned leaving things better than you found them, which I think applies to this conversation as well, because I've been reading a lot about the gender gap that exists within the cybersecurity workforce. And, you know, I read a recent ISC survey that found women currently make up roughly one quarter of the overall cybersecurity workforce, which is a higher number than it's been in the past. But there are still these gaps that remain. So, you know, from your perspective, what needs to happen to achieve more equality within cybersecurity?
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that question. I mean, so I'll ask you a question back before I answer the question, which makes me sound like a politician, which I'm not. But, briefly, what image flashes in your mind when you hear the word cybercrime? You know, is that image a room filled with happy, diverse, productive people making a difference, or is it a guy hunched over his computer wearing a dark hoodie? Which one?
It is definitely the second one. All those stock images that you see of guys sort of hunched over their computers definitely come to mind.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you're a woman looking at the next 30 to 40 years of your work life, which career would you choose? One that looks ominous, especially when I love when it's blue and green with ones and zeros going by. It's like, oh, sign me up for that. So we've got basically an optics and a branding problem, and it's a big hurdle that we face. And many surveys around cybersecurity, around diversity and inclusion, not just females, but also inclusion, from a minorities perspective and other underrepresented groups, is they're looking for a mentor that they can relate to. And so in my mind, at least three things need to happen. And first of all, hiring managers, if you're listening, reread those job descriptions you've written, because most of the ones I read are fairly soul crushing. They don't tie to a mission. They don't engage and energize the person reading it. It's an alphabet soup of certifications you're looking for. I would say hiring managers have to expand their criteria and qualifications, because they're leaving D&I candidates on the sidelines by chasing the same resumes, the same degrees, the same certifications. And yes, degrees and certifications might be an indicator of a successful hire, but it should not be the only one. Really the best cybersecurity professionals, women especially, are insatiable learners. They're highly skilled problem solvers, and they're always thinking about designing for the user without underestimating the adversary. So I always say, take a chance on a different degree or a different background and invest in cross-training so that you can attract more women. Second, and I mentioned this earlier, survey respondents note that they hesitate to choose cybersecurity as a profession due to a lack of role models and due to a lack of encouragement to pursue a degree in a technology-related field. And it's proven time and time again in other industries that professional mentorship and development dramatically increase participation in any given field. I firmly believe that although we lack D&I in cybersecurity, and it's a compounding problem, we don't lack talented women who are out there looking for their next career opportunity. So I would just say my third point would be, if you're a cyber practitioner and you're trying to decide whether or not this is for you, or you're on the outside looking in, thinking about coming in, take advantage of the amazing free tools that are out there. Many conferences are somewhat sidelined, but there are free tools out there. You don't have to buy a pass to RSA to see the speeches after the event. Look at TED Talks, even YouTube. Look at what veteran cybersecurity professionals are saying about their careers. Listen to their advice on how to succeed. Look at free online courses. I took a free online course in programming and Python, but there's some great things at Khan Academy, Udemy, MIT has some open courseware. And then maybe even check locally to see if maybe some of the boot camps are open. I also say to women, ask your colleagues to show you their favorite geek gadget or their favorite ethical hacking tool. You'll be surprised. They'll stop everything they're doing and show you. And that would be, I mean, I feel like cybersecurity really truly requires a general shakeup. And in order to address the shortage of diverse talent and women in cybersecurity, we really need to focus on the fact that there's lots of talented and strong women in the workforce. We just need to attract them and give them the mentors so that they'll come on over and fight cybercrime with the rest of us.
Yeah, sure. That's a great point. And this is a really timely conversation as well, because October is National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And I'd love to talk just for a second about your third book, which published just last year, titled Manipulated: Inside the Cyber War to Hijack Elections and Distort the Truth. Because one topic you discuss within that book is the growing problem of widespread misinformation in today's connected world. And, you know, with the recent election and the pandemic, this conversation has become even more relevant than it already was. So I was just curious, you know, from your perspective, how can individuals and companies separate fact from fiction and remain sort of resilient against things like digital manipulation and disinformation?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question, Elizabeth, because for company, let's start with companies and let's go to individuals. So we are seeing, based on some of the incident responses my team gets called into, where misinformation and disinformation campaigns are being used to trash an industry, a company, or an executive. And so I highly recommend creating an incident response playbook and practicing a playbook where perhaps your industry has a disinformation campaign being published about it. And what would you do as a company to gain your good reputation back? You know, I always say, people say like, oh, something untrue was said, so we need a debunking strategy. I always say, your best defense is a great offense. So you need a pre-debunking strategy. So dream up, like, what's the worst thing somebody would say about your industry, your company, your executives? And then what's really the truth? And have those stories ready, maybe even get some of those stories published. And then if you are attacked with some type of a disinformation campaign, you can always say, well, we're on the record. That's not who we are. And that's not what we are. And then you can, with that pre-debunking strategy, be ready to go. Now let's talk about individuals, because, you know, I'm growing increasingly concerned about the loss of civility and etiquette in our social discourse on almost every civic issue you can imagine. And, you know, I wrote in the book, for example, as I was doing the research for the book, which I started the idea and the research for the book prior to the 2016 elections, I just couldn't get the right storyline together for it to be appealing to my book agent. and I would say to her, this is really a problem. And she'd say, well, do you have a solution for it? And I'd say, no, I don't. And she's like, well, nobody wants to read nonfiction that's as scary as what you described to me, and there's no solution. She's like, you got to figure out what the solution is. And so I finally came down to the solution rests with international treaties and accords, with international ethical standards, but also the solution lies, Elizabeth, with you and me and everybody else. And so I look at sort of on the individual level, like I wrote about the anti-vax campaigns going on pre-COVID-19. In America, you had Russians posing as American citizens, stoking fears against vaccines for children, and then also promoting vaccines for children, which is really interesting. And it was really just to create a divide among us. During this pandemic, I actually updated my research from the book Manipulated, and I worked alongside Landon, who works for my company. And he and I purposely used a gaming computer that's in most households, all free tools. And we actually only allowed the tools to run for 48 hours. And we found misinformation, vaccine, anti-vax campaigns running on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, asking people for money to support the good fight in sort of anti-vax information, most of the information that these disinformation peddlers were peddling had been debunked repeatedly, even by people that are sort of ambivalent around whether or not you should get the vaccine. And they were taking people's money. We reported the accounts to social media platforms and to the FBI because they were taking money. And so the accounts had been suspended. But we actually showed a really important technique, Elizabeth. And that technique is, instead of growing a lot of followers on the surface, the accounts look a lot more benign, because what they do is they actually keep their follower count fairly low, and they join lots of different affinity groups that have many members. And so we found that, for example, they within the Los Angeles performing arts community, which has a ton of followers, would post misinformation and disinformation about vaccines. So I always say, you know, maybe people listening to your podcast, Elizabeth, maybe this book isn't for you, because this is an enlightened audience who already knows how to spot and ignore manipulation campaigns. But chances are maybe your family members, your best friends, your work colleagues, maybe they're falling prey. And so I've got something in here for you to be able to have those conversations. And I always say, if you're dealing with someone who is falling prey to manipulation campaigns, treat them with grace and space. You know, ask them, where did you get your information? Don't try to convince them in that moment that they're wrong. Go do some research and bring back research that kind of debunks what they're talking to you about. And I actually talk in there about how to approach people that are falling prey to these disinformation and misinformation campaigns.
That's great. Yeah. Misinformation is such an important topic right now. And so thank you so much for sharing that insight. And this has been a really great conversation. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Oh, thank you so much, Elizabeth. Anytime, and be safe out there.
That's all the time we have for this episode. Thanks to Magda and Teresa for taking the time to speak with me. And thanks to all of you for listening. Once again, my name's Elizabeth Blossfield, and I'm the host of the Insuring Cyber Podcast, a bi-monthly look into how the world of cyber and the business of insurance are connected. I hope everyone has had a safe Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and be sure to check back for new episodes of this podcast, where guests and I continue the conversation around cybersecurity and insurance every other Wednesday. Talk to you next time.